Welcome back to Alternative Realities. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. The pandemic, geopolitical tension, and climate change have revived industrial policy around the globe. In the US, the IIJA, the IRA, and the CHIPS Act collectively represent the largest investment in infrastructure since the Cold War. In particular, the significant opportunities in modernizing and expanding the electrical grid as decarbonization and data centers drive up demand. In addition to these secular tailwinds, core infrastructure's steady, uncorrelated cash flows make it a valuable portfolio diversifier. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Chris Simard, an investment specialist in the JP Morgan Infrastructure Investment Group, to parse through all of this and more. Well, Chris, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, David.
So to start with, let's talk about the universe of available infrastructure investments. I mean, how would you describe the overall category? And then what are the areas that your group focuses on?
Yeah, so it's certainly a universe that has grown over time, and infrastructure is still a relatively new asset class. So you're starting to get more of a definition of core versus core plus versus opportunistic. For us, it's mainly a focus on regulated assets like water, heat, and electricity, long-term contracted businesses like wind, solar, and gas generation, and then finally some GDP-sensitive assets like airports, liquid bulk storage, rail leasing, things that are a little bit higher up on the risk curve. Across infrastructure, you'll also see sectors like digital. You'll also see people going out as far as salmon fishing farms, hospitals, school buses, sectors that we probably wouldn't call infrastructure, but I'm sure you'll see those definitions across the market.
So we'll need a rather large paragraph in the definition section of the Guide to Alternatives to describe.
Exactly.
But it's nice sort of to define the space. So specifically, how do you define sort of core infrastructure, core plus, and opportunistic?
Yeah, in our view, it's anything with 10 plus years of cash flow visibility belongs in core. So that's really where the regulated and contracted assets fit. So again, you have your electric utilities, your water utilities, your power generation, most of those types of assets fit across that bucket. In terms of core plus, we view that as more of the GDP sensitive assets. So these are assets that have shorter term contracts that renew more frequently. So bulk liquid storage, airports, you may have 3 to 5 year contracts, a little bit more volumetric risk. They probably sit in that 10 to 12% return bucket versus true core. That's probably more like 8 to 10. And then on the opportunistic side, you definitely see more development. So that's where we think digital, pure development when it comes to renewables, you'll see mid-teen type discount rates or expected returns, but certainly a lot of volatility. So again, you're looking at green grass and building out wind or solar rather than having an operating asset with a contract in place and yield from day one. So that's generally how we look at it. And the final piece I'd mention is just cash yield. So for us, looking at 5 to 7% yield in core assets, once you get into the core plus and opportunistic space, that shrinks materially, again, depending on how much development you have.
Okay, interesting. So I know you spent a lot of time dealing with institutional clients. Can you tell me something about how much institutional clients are now allocating to infrastructure?
Yeah, and it really depends where you are. So in the US, we've seen allocation somewhere around 3 to 5% in the institutional space. I think historically, that has been a lot of closed-end private equity style funds that has grown more into the open-ended core space. And then in Europe and the UK, you're seeing allocations in the 5 to 10% range, sometimes even a little bit higher, definitely more in the open-ended core space. In Canada and Australia, you'll see allocations as high as 15 to 20%. So these are regions that have invested in infrastructure for a very long time. They really founded the asset class. I think they have the best education when it comes to infrastructure. So again, that's where you see certainly higher allocations than you'd see relative to the US, more of a tilt toward infrastructure than real estate. I do think it is really a question of education. So a lot of what we do across the institutional and high net worth markets is education on what is the asset class, what are the expected benefits of core versus opportunistic? And that's where you start to see it build out a little bit more.
And when you think about portfolios, I mean, what role can infrastructure play in a portfolio? What's it supposed to do for a portfolio?
Yeah, so we call it DIYM or DIME. So it's diversification, inflation protection, yield, and multiple. That's what we think of as the core benefits to a portfolio. So generally, you'd expect zero or close to zero correlation to equities, fixed income, and most alternatives. From an inflation protection standpoint, you usually have that through either a regulatory framework, where our water, heat, and electric bills generally go up with inflation. You could have that through an escalator in a contract. And then from a yield perspective, again, generally 5 to 7%, relatively tax efficient as well, given the depreciating nature of the assets. And from a multiple perspective, open-ended funds at least have a one-time full capital call. So a 7% return is a 2x net multiple over 10 years. So in our view, getting that consistent high single-digit return actually leads to as good or better multiples than you see across most of the private space.
And something you said earlier, when you talk about opportunistic infrastructure, does that tend to actually have lower yields but capital appreciation likely?
Absolutely. So that's where you see an airport that could have, you know, 2 to 4% cash yield, so relatively low, but discount rates that are 12 to 14%. So much higher on the capital appreciation standpoint, as you said. Core assets like utilities and power generation, typically 2/3 of total return is coming to you in the form of cash. So yield is usually a very good proxy of risk, which is, again, why we think the assets that are yielding more generally fit in that core bucket.
Okay, I get that. So another thing that I think is obviously very important is just governance in infrastructure. So how do you think about governance in private infrastructure?
Some of the biggest mistakes that we've made is when we've had a minority investment in a portfolio company. So we try to take only majority positions. We'd love to have 100% equity in any portfolio company that we're investing in. And generally, when you think about owning a business, if you have four different private equity firms trying to own the same asset, they all may have very different outcomes that they want for that specific portfolio company. One could want growth. Another could want to sell the asset in 2 or 3 years. In our case, we may want to hold it for a decade or two. So again, when you have those competing interests, it becomes very challenging. So for us, having 100% equity control, being able to put through a unified approach to asset management and value creation generally has worked well. And again, having those minority positions has always been a challenge. So in our view, governance, control, a huge part of managing long-term private infrastructure assets.
So that sounds like the way I feel about writing joint articles. I hate writing joint articles. I just want to be the one person who writes the article because I can actually then direct it exactly the way I want to direct it. But if you have to compromise a lot of other individuals, it just gets messy and is not efficient.
Same thing for us.
So how do you think secular trends like climate change and artificial intelligence are changing the opportunity set here?
Yeah, so our main areas of focus going forward for investing are energy transition, energy security, and power demand. Specifically on the power demand side, huge growth in digital, especially due to AI. So there's been a 69% year-on-year growth in data center build, again, since this year versus last year. And I think data center developers are focused more on how can I get power, so security of power, rather than actual price. So in our view, for our portfolio companies, the focus is that adjacent play to providing power to data centers for this AI growth, rather than investing in digital itself, which, as I said earlier, is more of an opportunistic play in the infrastructure space. So for us as a regulated utility owner to build out wind and solar that can provide power to the grid, or as just a flat power provider that already has connections to the grid, extremely, you know, positive tailwinds for us that we see. So we think it's gonna be a huge part of the infrastructure landscape going forward. Again, just depends how you play it. Pure digital play, which we think is more opportunistic, or this adjacent providing power for that solution.
So you're in the picks and shovels business rather than actually mining for gold.
Correct. Exactly right.
All right. Listen, Chris, this is a great overview of the space, but can you give us some actual specific examples of what you're doing in these investments?
Yeah. And just to give you an idea of how we make money in each sector, you'll have a regulated utility that has generally 100% regulated return for providing essential services to customers. So that could be a spread to the risk-free rate, for example, where you need to provide safe, reliable, affordable, and sustainable essential services like water, heat, and electricity. So that's what we're doing mainly across the US. We have some utility exposure in Europe as well. In the contracted power space, generally 10 plus year contracts where we are providing power to an investment grade counterparty and we're getting paid for that power that we're providing. Usually inflation linkage in the contracts. So you're not taking the risk of our power prices moving up or down today, Most of that is contracted away. So you're moving volume risk or market risk into counterparty risk. And most of the counterparties that you're working with in infrastructure are investment grade utilities. And then in the final bucket, the GDP sensitive category, you could be storing. So we have bulk liquid storage businesses that you'd see off to the side of the highway, the massive tanks where you're storing petrochemicals, oils, vegetable oils for companies like Shell, BP, Murphy, where again, you may have 3 to 5 year contracts, so on the shorter end, but they're renewing 95% of the time. So very frequent renewals. These are in the middle of the supply chains for these massive counterparties. And generally when they want to grow through a bulk liquid storage owner in a space that they're already comfortable with. So a lot of growth in the three areas, at least that we're invested in, but hopefully that gives you a little bit of flavor of how you're making money in each category.
It sounds like a pretty massive amount of investment across a lot of individual infrastructure companies. I mean, would that be correct?
That's correct. And not only that, it's a huge amount of investment going forward as well. So when we think about the energy transition, we don't think there's enough capital to actually invest in the transition, debt, equity, or government related. And in infrastructure, those that already own the assets are the ones that we think will benefit and can actually decarbonize these businesses over time. So an electric utility having a huge amount of CapEx spend planned going forward, where you're investing in your own system, you're making the system safer and more reliable, but at the same time, you're decarbonizing. So those things working together, specifically for someone that already owns the asset, not someone that's trying to build something new or invest in kind of smaller technologies.
I suppose it gives you two advantages. I mean, one is if you do get into a new business, well, you've operated a lot of very similar businesses and you are operating a lot of very similar businesses. And also, you know, just because the growth in demand, particularly for electricity, there's a lot of potential for just capital spending and just growing the business you've got.
That's right. And when you're thinking about it from a risk standpoint as well, to invest behind a board and management team that you've already put in place, in our view, is much lower risk than doing an auction, going into a brand new business. Yes, you get to do diligence on the company, but it's hard to know for sure once you're actually in the business. A lot of these companies we've owned for over a decade. So for us to put the next dollar in that business versus an auction in a brand new portfolio company, much different risk profile in our view.
So you know what you're dealing with. So I guess one last question. Should people think differently about investing in infrastructure through private markets and public markets?
I think so. And I think it's a common misconception that, well, I can just own the listed utility index or some sort of listed infrastructure index. I think there's a couple things that you can focus on. One is a lot of the listed utility companies, as a stock, they're trying to keep up with some of the growth stocks in the market. So the Metas and the Googles, in order for them to grow, they can't just be the listed regulated utility portion of the utility. They may have ancillary businesses that are very focused on growth. So you may be an electric utility, but you may have an arm that half of your revenue comes from growing renewables, for example. So you always need to look at under the hood, what are these listed companies actually investing in? And then of course, the ability for you and I to buy and sell those companies on a daily basis, where a lot of the private funds will have quarterly or annual valuations. So certainly, from that perspective, you may have a little bit less volatility, but in general, over time, I think from private core infrastructure, far different volatility than you see in listed, certainly a lot less correlation to public equity markets.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us today. That was a really fascinating quick tour around infrastructure investing. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Appreciate you having me.
The securities highlighted above have been selected based on their significance and are shown for illustrative purposes only. They are not recommendations. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.